Then something happened. A lot of the cults faded away.
And so in the mid-1970s, and in many parts of the country,
people started giving up on the idea that you should require labor in a co-op. But we never gave up on the idea.
Because the Park Slope Food Co-op is such a unique business model, it's often misunderstood, and that can lead to tension. Founder and General Coordinator Joe Holtz.
Well, I was at a conference like in around circa 1980, and someone from New England said to me, "Oh, the Park Slope Food Co-op, oh, you're from that co-op that excludes people who don't want to work." So I said, "Yeah, and you're from a co-op that excludes people who can't afford the prices. So you could live with your exclusion, and we'll live with ours."
As the Park Slope founders and members see it, there are a few problems with the typical co-op model. Joe Holtz.
The co-ops that were started just so that people could have access to this good food, what if the access is no longer an issue? What if the food is now very accessible in their community?
When Park Slope and other co-ops started, access to high-quality, responsibly sourced health food was limited. Now, especially in large metropolitan areas, it's easier to find food the co-ops used to specialize in, and stores like Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and even Walmart have organic options.
What if the co-op can't sell the food for as cheaply as the competitor? What are people going to do then? Are people going to still support the co-op if it doesn't make practical sense?
The Park Slope Food Co-op is business savvy.
The co-op is not a theoretical experiment. It's something that exists in the real world and has to deal with real world problems. We have to pay our bills on time so that people like selling food to us and be a good business for other businesses to do business with. But in the beginning, the word business was barely ever uttered.
Mike Aiken is a general coordinator at the Park Slope Food Co-op. He was the co-op's second employee after Joe Holtz. He came to the co-op with an MBA from Harvard and a very different lifestyle.
As a management consultant, I used to fly around the country first class and tell people how to run their businesses. Basically, when I decided that I had enough of the corporate world after a decade of the 60s, I searched around for alternative institutions, and I found various things, but they mostly didn't work. And this was the first sort of alternative institution I came across that actually functioned.
With Mike's background in business, he helped coordinate the co-op's first expansion in 1978. Then he set up its bookkeeping system. He also contributed a lot to the co-op's operational efficiency and managing its inventory.
So where your typical large food co-op might keep maybe 38, 39 cents out of every dollar of sales, we keep less than 17 cents of every dollar, and we're able to operate on that. So our margin is a little under 17%, which is fairly low for a conventional store.
Mike brought a really great great sense of how to operate things.
Joe Holtz.
I was able to look at something and say, that's stupid. That's going to make us go out of business. Let's not do that. You know what I mean? But he could do that too. So we did it together.
I had always expected to retire, you know, when I got to 65 or something like that, but it turned out I really didn't want to retire that much. And so now I'm 75 and I'm working, I think, 72% of full time. It's perfect life.
It seems remarkable how obsessed the Park Slope Co-op is with sustainability. Not growth like other businesses, but sustainability. That means, for example, $30 million went through the door last year, and they ended it with less than nothing. Joe Holtz.
We ended the last fiscal year with minus $100,000. But our goal has been to give cheap prices to members and save as you shop and not have profits to distribute to anybody at the end of the year.
The key with a co-op, as with any business, is not to get distracted when important decisions have to be made.
It's a democracy, because I have to tell you, as an employee here and as someone who has to worry about the financial success of the co-op, not all the good ideas are going to come from me or from people like me, because I have to be a financial steward. And some of the things that our members have decided to do from a business point of view are a little scary.
And because every member is an owner,
it's more distracting, because you have so many people pitching their ideas about the way it should go. And every idea is legitimate because it comes from a member owner. On the other hand, sometimes you learn great ideas that way. And that's beautiful. And the co-op is better for that openness and that transparency.
I'm Lisa Caswell. I've been a member of the co-op for about a year.
How do you like being a walker?
I like it now. I don't know how much I'm going to like it in February.
A walker is someone who goes with members to their home or car and returns with the shopping cart.
I just walked a mom and a daughter to their car where the three-year-old talked my ear off the entire way there and then did not want me to leave.
The walker's work slot was created after members started blocking the neighboring fire station with their cars when they came to pick up their groceries. Now people who live or park within a six-block radius can have a walker help them. But for the Park Slope Co-op, explosive membership growth has always been a problem. Joe Holtz.
I could say it's very frustrating, you know, because I've been dealing with this problem for forever. The Line Waiters Gazette.
The Line Waiters Gazette is a biweekly newsletter written by members.
And it was named that in 1975, and it was named that for a reason. It's because you could expect to wait online. We used to pass out the newsletter down the street. We open up more days, more shopping hours, more space. At the end of the day, which might take 5 years, you're too crowded.
Member and walker, Lisa Caswell.
It's definitely overcrowded a lot of the time. My boyfriend will not become a member because it's not worth it for him. I'm very picky about my food, so I try to come when it's not so crowded and deal with it.
There are just under 14,000 members utilizing the space.
We weren't thinking we'd be 1,200 members more today than we were last year, but we are. So if 1,500 people were to leave, what would happen? Probably 1,500 people will join.
Ellen Weinstadt.
It's not as intimate as it once was when it was, you know, originally it was one room once a week. You know, originally it was 22 people. So it's a little different. As the economy gets worse, there are more and more people who are looking for alternative economic models and people who are looking to co-ops as an economic model. And I'd love to see more of that. More cooperation, more community, instead of more competition and more capitalism.
People are living a lifestyle that's not sustainable.
Co-op member Ursula Rudenberg.
And I think until recently this was considered a progressive theory, and now all of a sudden, with the stock market crash, it's become a matter of fact. And one of the things people are asking is, what are alternatives? You know, how do we come up with real-life sustainable models, not just theories? And I think the co-op presents an example that is a demonstration of what an alternative can be.
Co-op member Din Clark.
The co-op's like my really good friend that, you know, you don't want to give up. And sometimes, you kind of need a little space and things aren't working out right now. I'm a little upset with you. And then you go off and you try to make new friends. And then you realize, I miss the old person. And you go back. And that's my relationship with the co-op. It's a pretty great place. And I'm glad that it exists. I'm glad that I found it. And I'm glad that I work there.
We know from the surveys we do of people who depart that often they move elsewhere, and the thing they miss most is the food co-op. And that's great. And I'm sorry there aren't others like it around the country, but you know, people are trying. It's a hard thing to get something like this going, but it's wonderful if you succeed.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to We'll Work for Food. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Production assistance came from Courtney Smith, Doug George, and Ursula Rudenberg in New York City. The music you heard was Election Day Serenade by Pops Muhammad, Looking for a Leader by Neil Young, Autre Mer by Charlie Hunter Grage à Toi, and Flight by the Cinematic Orchestra. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. I'm Christine Black at Pacifica Radio in New York City. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, it's the 9 minutes late edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides for November 20th, 2008. Hopefully next time Sprouts comes on, it will be put on promptly, and we'll actually have some activity here. Stay tuned.
Here we go. Well, the sun came up and shone into my eyes. Another day fills up them country skies. But I'm so tired of living this country life. I'm gonna pack my bags and kiss it all goodbye. The sun has my new knife. Down the road, leaving everything behind is such a heavy load. From the country, life goes on and on. I'm just another kid who's up and gone to the city. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. I'm going to say.
And I think that was On the West Bay Drive by the Pasties in the album Punk as Folk, also known as Hail Seizures. I'm not sure if the Pasties is also known as Hail Seizures or if it's a second group that has joined the Pasties. In any case, that's the music for the beginning of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which is now what you're tuned to here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. In case you want to call in with updates, questions, criticisms, reactions, the number to call is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC. I'm Robert Norris, also known as Robert Norris Khan, but mainly Robert Norris. That's what a name I use around here pretty much. And we're going to be talking about a number of issues here today. Familiar ones to those who know the show, and again, part of a continuing local civil rights struggle to restore basic rights to poor people in Santa Cruz. If you want to follow some of this, as a City on a Hill Press reporter apparently did, who called me earlier, she wanted to, you know, get an interview and chat, and I suggested she tune into the show to get some sense of what's happening, because we're about to play some interviews on the streets, which I usually do in great number or limited number, depending on what else is happening. But tonight we're going to be having a special interview tonight at 6:30 with Mike Rhodes, who is a Fresno activist, one of the more successful activists on homeless civil rights issues. He and others in Fresno were able to get attorneys together to successfully prosecute and secure the Kincaid settlement, as it's called, the Kincaid decision and settlement in federal court, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which found that the city of Fresno was vulnerable to the tune of $2.3 million for its depredations and seizures of homeless property, which actually Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz, is actually using almost identical procedures. They are destroying property, and they're not storing homeless property. They are posting it, but they are then coming in and taking it without storing it, which is the demand made by the federal judge, Wanger, who made the ruling in this case and charged the city $2.3 million, about $1.5 million of which, I believe, is going to homeless people themselves for loss of property, loss of valuable personal items, and other damages. We have, as some of you may know who's listened to this show or have just lived in Santa Cruz, a chief ranger, his name is John Wallace, who was very zealous about cleaning up the Poganip and other park areas of the city. So zealous, in fact, that he regards homeless survival gear as trash and authorizes the labor-ready cleanup crews to go out and destroy it. This becomes particularly venomous and lethal in the winter, when such survival gear, tents, sleeping bags, warm clothing, food, is essential to well-being of people who are out there who have no legal place to go. And that is the situation for 95% of the homeless people, maybe 93% or 92% in the winter when the armory opens up, so you actually have a total number of drop-in emergency spaces up to 160, 180, something like that. But you have 1,500 to 2,000 within the city limits, and so you have an acknowledged shelter emergency, and there is, at the same time, a law that criminalizes homeless people, the so-called Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban, Municipal Code 6.36010A. The B is the blanket ban, and C is the camping ban, which is enforced by Ranger Wallace and his support crews of three rangers and four cops, all of which, of course, are taking a nice big chunk out of the budget. And will these cops be reduced in the Poganip? Will they be reduced from their actions downtown, harassing poor and homeless people down there? Or will the budget cuts come out of other services in the next upcoming city council meeting next Tuesday? There is a council meeting on November 25th, 2 days before Thanksgiving. Last council meeting of November, second to the last meeting of the year, at which there have been a determination by the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, that there had to be severe cuts made, not necessarily in his salary, or $160,000, or police chief's salary up there similarly, but in, well, who knows what, social services perhaps, or perhaps in, you know, Ranger Wallace's depredation crew. It's hard to tell what's going to happen. But if you want more information, you can always call the mayor at 420-5020, which is the number for the entire Santa Cruz City Council, in case you want to leave them a message. 420-5020. It's a 24-hour voicemail. And in theory, they will be responding to their calls. Often this is really theory. So, for example, Mayor Coonerty hasn't returned a call of mine in, gosh, a year and a half. He claims that I have maligned his family, and therefore he doesn't have any responsibility to his constituents to answer questions posed by me as a radio broadcaster and a member of the public. But perhaps he'll have better luck. He was reelected by the largest vote majority of any of the candidates, though less, I understand, than previous top vote getters. But still, You know, it's kind of hard to blink that result. It's kind of hard to deny that that mean that that doesn't mean something. And I, particularly in a year when supposedly there was a liberal move with the election of Obama as president, Barack Obama. Of course, the problem with that, of course, has always been that Barack Obama is a centrist Democrat who's committed to the same policies as, at least abroad, the same defense of the empire as the Republicans, although perhaps a little less strident. But, you know, the same stuff, the same 700-odd military bases around the globe, the same expansion of the military budget, the same expansion of the army, the same will stay in Iraq for the security of the people and the little puppet regime there, all that stuff, until, you know, a couple years down the road. And then we'll keep troops there for a while longer, and then we'll move more into Afghanistan and Pakistan. So maybe it is not so unusual that Coonerty, who claims to be an Obama Democrat, is using a similar kind of war on terror against poor people here in Santa Cruz as our country's leaders, Democrat and Republican, Obama voted for the war budget, are using abroad. So I know this doesn't, you know, sit well with those of you who like to have the audacity of hope, or is it the stupidity of hope? I'm not sure. But in any case, that's my perspective. You know, you're welcome to have yours, and I'd be happy to hear it. Who knows? Maybe not happy, but certainly willing. Phone number here is 427-3772. Wow, that is a loud ring. Let me turn down that ringer and actually answer the phone. Let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. This is John Tilking.
Hey there, Dangerous John. What's a good word?
I was just over at San Jose State University today checking out what they call the Tent City over there.
Oh, Tent City. You mean for poor and homeless people, or is it for some other purpose?
I think it's mostly to dramatize the situation surrounding Katrina in New Orleans.
Okay.
And also they're going to have some local blanket drives and food drives for the homeless in San Jose associated with it.
Okay. So it's not about the local San Jose homeless and their need for shelter, but about something else.
Well, it's about both, basically.
About what?
They are doing a blanket drive for the homeless in San Jose.
That's good. That's good. Blanket drives are very nice in the winter. We had a similar thing here in Santa Cruz. It was actually publicized in the Sentinel, and then there was a lot of debate or discussion by the same seven or eight diehard anti-homeless folks, some of them denouncing the drive, others saying, well, at least these people are getting blankets, unlike civil rights activists who are simply, you know, tooting their own horn.
Talking about it and not doing anything, right?
Well, they claim that people like myself and other activists like Becky Johnson are counterproductive because we attack politicians and alienate the good middle-class people. And, of course, my perspective has always been that, you know, you are going to alienate some people by raising these issues, but the important thing is to raise the issues. And if the raising issues alienate some people, hopefully it also draws others into a fraternity of support. The basic issue, of course, is civil rights for poor people and the right to some kind of, to make your own shelter at the very least and to be free from criminalization during the winter and hopefully all year round.
Right.
So anyway, I'm glad to hear that San Jose's students, city college students, is that who they are?
San Jose State.
Ah, San Jose State. That they are doing a tent city. I know that I believe the CHAM, the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, headed by Reverend Scott Wagers, came out of San Jose State 20 years ago. They were actually taking over abandoned buildings, marching on City Hall, demanding that there be, instead of fancy baseball and football stadiums, I'm not sure which, there be actual resources for poor and homeless people. And they actually got some motion in that direction. So who knows what's going to come out of this?
Well, all I know is that CHAM is going to be part of the demo here tonight and tomorrow.
Oh, great.
It's running tonight and tomorrow. There's going to be a kind of a food drive or food box set up on Friday where volunteers are going to put together food boxes for the homeless.
Well, I know the figures show massive increases in demand for food, significant increases, at least according to the local fish wrap the urinal, the Santa Cruz urinal, or the sentinel, as some call it. So there is, you know, increasing hunger and increasing need. And I was surprised also to see, though, that people, even the people who are suffering themselves, are still donating at the same level they were last year. But, of course, since the need has risen, the amount that is, you know, out there is a smaller percentage of what's required. So,
yeah, I myself am going to Second Harvest Food Bank, and they seem to have as much food as you need for a week.
Second Harvest Food Bank?
Yeah, you work there 3 hours, and then you get a
couple
bags of groceries out of it.
Yeah, I know they are. Actually, they also do I think they have food bins in Santa Cruz, or they used to, and there are ways to contribute food. And they're planning, there's a big meal coming up at the Santa Cruz Veterans Hall on Thanksgiving, which is it's an excellent meal. It's very yummy, and you know you can get stuffed with turkey and cranberry sauce and everything you can eat. And the same is true on Christmas. And of course, my point is always, you know, to feed people 2 days a year is very nice, and you know, I'm glad it happens, but what about the rest of the time? You know, what are the opportunities that are really available for people? And that's the question.
Okay, well, that's the report that I have. There's also apparently a sleep out at Granham High School. High school students are doing that, too.
Granham High School?
San Jose.
How do you spell it?
I'm not sure. It's like Granham. H-A-M.
Okay, well,
like,
you know, if any of the CHAM people want to call in and talk about what they're doing, give us an update. I mean, they have been out of communication almost for a decade. So love to hear from them, Sandy Perry, Scott Wagers, anybody else who wants to get in touch. If you run into any of them, stick your phone in their face and see if they'll talk.
Yeah, I'm at home right now, but I might go back down there for the 6 to 9 p.m. movie showing.
Oh, what's the movie?
Have something going on.
What's the movie?
Waging a Living.
Sorry?
Waging a Living.
Waging a Living. Here. Okay, well, that's probably a bit over the hill. For those, actually, since it's 6:30, it's probably already begun. But let us know if anything comes up, and if there's anything more that comes out of this, call back on Sunday when, you know, we have our morning show, 9:30 to 1.
So. All right.
Thanks a lot for calling in, John.
Hey, bye.
All righty. Calling lines are open. 427-3772 is the number. 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I said we were going to play some street interviews, but unfortunately I think I'm running low on time. What I'm going to do, given that situation, is I'm going to go to my computer and see what I can find around, recent interview, or I should say recent email from Fresno homeless advocate Mike Rhodes. It's interesting. This is a Fresno homeless advocates at yahoogroups.com. It's a group that talks about things in Fresno. And as I said, Fresno is, you know, it seems like it's kind of an out-of-the-way place. It's further away than the second largest city in the state, San Jose, that we just heard from a little bit. Further away than San Francisco, perhaps as far away, if not further than Sacramento, state capital. Why look at Fresno? And the answer for me is because Fresno has an active homeless civil rights movement that is actually quite successful. And so perhaps we can learn something by looking at Fresno and checking out their methods, seeing what they do, and hearing from them. And hopefully Mike will be calling in with an update. What he says on the internet, in the latest email, is he's talking about charity. And we're going to hear and see a lot of charity around that holiday. And I don't want to disparage charity over much. I guess I want to disparage it a little, you know. I think charity is good. I do charity a little bit and give away stuff, you know. But charity is charity. It hasn't got a lot to do with, you know, payment for work or basic human rights, regardless of whether you like the person or feel like they're worthy or not. And that really is my issue and my concern in these broadcasts and in a lot of what I do and have done over the last few decades here in Santa Cruz. What little that is. The discussion online is about a group called Arcs of Safe Haven, which is a group that apparently Mike Rhodes and other activists there haven't heard of. And he says, I have no idea who Arcs of Safe Haven is, and so far as I know, they are not active in Fresno. For people looking to help the homeless in Fresno, he recommends Food Not Bomb, Saturday and Sunday, and St. Benedict Catholic Worker. They give food to the homeless without any strings attached. I would not want anyone on this listserv to give contributions to groups that force the homeless to attend religious services, or worse, take and destroy homeless people's property. For example, Larry Arkey, the CEO of the Rescue Mission, has directed his staff to take and destroy homeless people's property. In October 2006, when he was called as a witness in the federal lawsuit, he said, we clean the street in front of the Rescue Mission every day and throw everything away that is left behind. When asked if they would throw someone's property away if they had left it in a cart in front of the mission while they got a warm meal, he said, if someone leaves their property in front of the Fresno Rescue Mission, they have no sense. Arkey said they have thrown many shopping carts full of homeless people's possessions away over the last several years. And I got to point out that Santa Cruz has a practice of harassing people with shopping carts. They have a practice of... It's illegal to have unattended property. So if you leave your property to go to the bathroom, let's say, on the public sidewalk somewhere, even if it's off to the side, that can not only be confiscated, but you can get a fine for doing so. So, again, Santa Cruz is on the repression scale way ahead of Fresno. And, of course, on the sleeping ban scale, it's way ahead of Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, Palo Alto, and Richmond because it has sleeping ban nighttime enforcement, where it makes it criminal, thanks to the Coonerty Council's continuing law, to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, even though there's no legal shelter for 95% of the community who is homeless outside. So, Mike Rhodes continues to write in this email, attorneys for six homeless people have filed a lawsuit in Fresno County Superior Court alleging that the Rescue Mission, a homeless shelter in downtown Fresno, has taken and destroyed personal belongings that are critical to their survival, such as clothing, medication, tents, and blankets, as well as irreplaceable personal possessions, such as family photographs, identification, personal records, and documents. And again, this is the second lawsuit. The first one was the Kincaid lawsuit, named after the now-dead Pam Kincaid, who actually spoke on the station before she died about a year ago, I guess it was, which found against both the city and Caltrain, and they got to pay $2.3 million. This is against the Rescue Mission, which is also acknowledged destroying homeless property. So the important thing here is not that a bunch of lawyers get some money, which is partially what happens, but that these organizations are deterred from their practice of hurting people and herding people and trying to drive them out of public spaces because it doesn't fit in with their middle-class worldview in what they're doing. And that's kind of what's happening in Santa Cruz downtown in terms of what I call the Coonerty crackdown on Pacific Avenue. I'm going to be playing some tape, which I mentioned before around that. In fact, I may start playing tape in the expectation that at some point we are going to be interrupted because, again, I do expect to get a call. Perhaps that was the call, but I don't think so because it only rang once, you know, on the... The activists always ring twice, at least. So we'll see what's cooking here. I guess since my throat is a little raspy, you can probably hear it, and I hope I don't sound too cranky, probably a little. Let's turn to some interviews on the streets. This is from about a week ago, Wednesday, after another successful drum circle. And by the way, the report I got from Jay was that folks came and drummed yesterday at the parking lot number 4 next to the farmer's market. Police tried to put up a fence, or the city employees did, and people simply took it down and assembled as usual. So good work, people. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Mike Rhodes from Fresno.
Hey, Mike, I was just talking about you, in fact, reading your email regarding... food sources you recommend, the second lawsuit that's been filed against the Rescue Mission, and your sense about charity when it's linked up with religious messages and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. always a lot going on here in Fresno. Yeah, there was an email that went out suggesting people give money to some religious organization. And, you know, I had somebody ask me just earlier in the week about donating to the Rescue Mission. And this person, you know, wanted to help the homeless here in Fresno, and they asked what I thought about the Rescue Mission. And I just, it's just appalling to me that anybody that, you know, wants to improve the situation with the homeless would donate to some place like that. It's, I just don't understand it.
Well, you know, you did point out in your letter that they have been responsible for just repeatedly seizing and dumpsterizing and destroying homeless people's property, survival gear, personal effects, medications, and so forth, and that they are being taken to court for it. And it's not an idle threat. Like here in Santa Cruz, we've threatened repeatedly to sue around the sleeping ban, and we've not been able to get it together. But you in Fresno have gotten it together against Caltrain and against the city, as I was just mentioning before you called, and were able to successfully win a settlement. What's the status of that settlement? I keep asking you because I know we've talked about the person who's supposed to be implementing it was kind of bounced out of the Catholic services or something because they she didn't pay enough rent or whatever. I wasn't quite entirely clear about that. They weren't getting kicked down enough cash, and that some people were getting some money, but that it's still sort of a lot of it hasn't gotten to homeless people yet. And it was what? It's been about 2 or 3 months now, right?
Yeah, well, the settlement actually was finalized during the summer, and the first money started being distributed on October 2nd. There was, you know, a little bit of a stretch there that people were upset that the money wasn't getting properly distributed. It just wasn't getting out at all, and they couldn't understand why it was taking so long. And do you want me to explain kind of what the process was? That is kind of interesting if
sure.
you have a minute.
Go for it.
The issue was that we got $1.485 million. That's a lot of money. $1 million of it went into a fund for things like housing and PG&E, that sort of thing. So there's actually just $485,000 for homeless people. About 300, this is a class action lawsuit, about 350 people actually applied to be on the class action suit. 344 of them were accepted as members. And the settlement administrator had to talk to each person, interview them to figure out what had happened in their particular case because the money wasn't distributed evenly. You know, of those 344 people, everybody didn't get a flat, I don't know, whatever it would be, you know, $10,000 or something. But it was distributed she created five levels of harm that was done to homeless people, starting with homeless people who had just been minimally affected by the city policy. City came through and, you know, took some of their property one time. And then people on the higher end of that scale had been attacked repeatedly, had lost medicine, perhaps had suffered some health consequences as a result of that. Some of those people got as much as $30,000 in the settlement. Some of the people who, as I mentioned earlier, suffered minimally, some of them got as little as $500. So there's a wide range there, and there was 344 people to talk to, some of which aren't easy to find. And so for months, Lisa Apper, who's the settlement administrator, was interviewing people. And, you know, there was some concern about what would happen with that money once it was released into the community. Obviously, you don't want to just give people thousands of dollars in cash. You know, say somebody who got $30,000, you know, you give them $30,000 in cash and they walk out on the street, well, they could be a target. You know, somebody could attack them to take their money. So Lisa helped people set up banking accounts and that sort of thing so that they had some place to put the money and they could withdraw it as needed. So that's kind of what happened with the settlement. Not all of the money has been distributed yet, but a good portion of it has. And some people, a number of people, I think the number is 39 in the first month, which would have been the month of October, tapped into the housing fund and got apartments or houses. Some people got paid their rent for a year. I just talked to a couple of folks who rented a apartment for a year, and they said they still have, because there's two of them, they were both affected by the city policy, they still have maybe two more years after that first, so a total of 3 years of paid rent that they can look forward to.
Go ahead.
I didn't want to just keep talking and not give you...
No, I imagine you can keep talking, giving us more information and appropriate information, but I will interrupt just to ask, what percentage of the homeless population is actually impacted by this settlement in Fresno, in your estimation, in terms of getting any money?
Yeah, a small fraction of people.
5%, 1%, 30%?
I would say there's probably somewhere between 10 and 20,000 homeless people in Fresno. 344 people are members of the class. You could do the math. You know, if there's, that's what it is.
Would that mean that, 15,000 people who aren't a part of the settlement have not lost property and are able to, form protective living situations where the police are not harassing them?
No, there's all kinds of sub-issues that become involved here because some of the people that were affected by the city policy, for a variety of reasons, don't want to be a part of legal action against the city. A couple of those reasons are some people are here without legal documentation. They don't have a driver's license and birth certificate and all that. So, they are afraid of deportation. So there are people that, didn't become a part of the class because of that. There are people that, were there, could have been a part of it, but maybe they moved to Santa Cruz and they didn't know about it. So there's a lot of people that left the area that has, or maybe they just got a job somewhere in Fresno. Now they live in another part of town and they weren't aware of all this. So, people's circumstances change all the time. And so some of those people that should have benefited from this didn't. And that was one of the frustrating things for all of us in this, is that there were a lot of people who should have benefited from it. Some of them died. We had two of the named plaintiffs. In the case, there was eight named plaintiffs. Two of those people died before the settlement became available. So a lot of other homeless people in Fresno have died since the trial, the case started as well. Some people are in prison or in jail. They can't, get out to apply. So it was a major frustration for us, knowing going into this that there was no way that this was going to be perfectly fair to everybody, because it's just, there's no way we could do that. And also you had other people that weren't there at that time but applied and said that they were. And, I'm sure Lisa did as good a job as she can to sort people out, but it's, she's not an investigator and she doesn't have unlimited resources. And so some people undoubtedly benefited from this that weren't really a victim of the city's policy.
But again, 350 is a pretty small chunk of 10,000 to 20,000 homeless people. I guess the broader question, perhaps the one that really is more important for those of us in Santa Cruz who are looking at a similar injunction, is, has it had an impact on the police department's policy and the policy of downtown associations, private security guards, predatory poverty pimps like you suggest, Larry Arce, is that his name?
Arce,
sorry about that, Larry. That's his name, of the rescue mission, who apparently has, by your account, been destroying homeless property regularly, or his agents have. Has that had an effect on these folks to the extent that they aren't doing that as much anymore, or they're doing it not at all, or they've become good Christians and are out there feeding the poor and without demanding religious Sieg Heils at the same time? What's going on?
Well, you know, you don't change the police department's culture overnight. I mean, they are what they are, right? I mean, they just because they lose a lawsuit or the city loses a lawsuit, they're still the same people, and they still have the same approaches to things. I can't say that we have changed their culture. We have forced them to do some things differently than they did before. For example, the city of Fresno is no longer able to take and immediately destroy homeless people's property. They have to store it for 90 days, and homeless people have to have an opportunity to reclaim that property.
Of course, you mentioned, I think, on a number of occasions on the station, that what that really amounts to is they dump it into a huge dumpster. It can get soaked, it's mixed in and hard to find, and it doesn't really amount to a meaningful chance to review what has been taken and get it back, right?
Well, you know, that's like what I said. It doesn't change the culture of the departments or their approach to things.
That's a criminal culture, it sounds like to me. I mean, if you are claiming to be a police department that's storing property and instead you throw it into a dumpster where it's unavailable for, and you know, it can't be indexed by the date it was taken, by the officers who took it, by the so-called location it came from, then you're simply, you know, you're engaging in a trash pickup masquerading as a storage area.
I wouldn't disagree with you, Robert. I've been down there several times to see what their storage is like. And actually, I've got to tell you that it's a little better now than it was at the beginning.
Because of your visits, or?
It could be. You know, who knows? For whatever reason, it's better.
It should
better.
Be pointed out that when you do visit, in fact, one of the key aspects to the lawsuit was you had video evidence of the seizure of a lot of this property. You had video evidence of city agencies destroying perfectly usable homeless property, and so that kind of got the judge a little ticked, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what made the case in Fresno, is the documentation that we did before we even took this to court. We had a lot of photographs, we had video. And then afterwards, when they did their first cleanup, I went down to the city yard with a homeless person who had her property taken, with a video camera in hand. And, you know, I just caught them flat-footed. They took us out to where this container was. They parked it in the middle of a parking lot at the city yard and didn't properly cover it. It had rained.
So it masqueraded as a swimming pool sewage tank, eh?
Yeah, it stunk to high heaven. And you know, I had it right there on the video.
And were you able to get, I'm encouraged to hear that a second lawsuit has been filed against Poverty Pimp Land, Larry Arce's rescue mission, and I'm kind of picking up from you. I don't know Larry, and I don't know the rescue mission. I just know what you write about him, which I'm taking at face value. Probably not fair because I haven't talked to Larry. But
give him a call.
What's that?
Give him a call.
Yeah, well, you know, you send me his number, and I'll give him an opportunity to speak on the air. You know, in response to these concerns, I don't know if he'll take me up on it, but sure.
Yeah,
you know, why don't you email that to me? We're talking with Mike Rhodes of Fresno, who's part of the Community Alliance, a group that's concerned with a variety of social justice issues. I'm particularly talking to him about civil rights for the homeless, and you've also been involved in the broader discussion of the government's bogus 10-year plans to end homelessness, the city's token efforts to actually do something around issues, and I guess some successful thwarting of Fresno's plans to enact a Santa Cruz-style camping ban or sleeping ban. How's that going?
Yeah, well, it was stopped. So was the ordinance to stop people from panhandling. We put that story on the front page of the Community Alliance newspaper, and after that, it just sort of went away. They wanted to stop people from having a sign on a median asking for money. And they have the audacity to say things like, well, this law would apply equally to the rich and the poor. You know, but they started kibitzing about that because they have some favorite charities that also use the medians to solicit funds one or two times a year. So they would make exceptions for them. You know, we were able to point out how totally outrageous that was and how they were targeting the poor that it never went any further. And neither did the camping ban either. They did propose that there was a conservative city council member that proposed it. It went back to the city manager's office for revisions, and then it never re-emerged. So we have won a few key battles in this, but you know, it's just so far from, you know, being where we want to be. I mean, we want people to have affordable, decent housing. Right now, the only housing that the city offers homeless people, well, there's a few shelter beds, one of which is the Rescue Mission, where you have to get down on your knees and pray to their God before you are given a room, and a few other rooms in town. But, you know, it's like 150 beds for, what, 15,000 people that are homeless every night? It's ridiculous. The city has responded to that by putting up about 100 tool sheds that they allow homeless people to sleep in. And it's just hideous. If you were to put your child in one of these tool sheds and that was their room, you would probably be charged with child neglect. But
the homeless are tough. They're rough. They're hardy. And after all, what percentage of the homeless in Fresno are children anyway?
Well, according to the Fresno Unified School District, which is just one school district in this community, they say they have 3,000 students in the Fresno Unified School District that are homeless. It's a lot of freaking kids.
What about when homeless people try to take care of themselves, as they have to do, and they will do here in Santa Cruz as well? Places like New Jack City or The Hill, or the names of homeless encampments you've mentioned, how are they doing? Have other encampments arisen? I know you mentioned in the past the city has been so generous as to provide one porta potty for the 100-plus people at the at New Jack City, I think it was, but plus a security guard to make sure that the porta potty isn't damaged in any way, or that drugs aren't used, or that hookers aren't involved. I'm not sure what the purpose of it is, but in other words, what's happening with homeless self-help efforts that are, you know, involved in simply people trying to get out of the situation themselves by forming the kind of tent cities they formed in Ontario, California, in Reno, Nevada, and Las Vegas, and elsewhere?
Well, it's the encampment on H Street, which is New Jack City, the one you refer to. It's really sort of divided into two different communities now. There's a community that's under the bridge, and there's probably 150 people that live there. And this is an abandoned freeway overpass, and they blocked it off because of concerns that it might fall down or something. But, you know, I guess it's okay for the homeless to live under there because, well, where else are they going to go? Anyway, just outside of that overpass, there's a large field, and that has been now developed into a second encampment, largely Mexican immigrants who have gotten pretty darn serious about some of their shelters. They've put shelters in there now that have foundations. They have framed walls. They have pitched roofs up. So this is totally different than anything we had before. one of the things that we discovered in the last couple months there is that in addition to this nice building site they have, there's a huge container of oil of some kind that's underground. And we've been talking to the health department about it. And the health department is concerned. This property is owned by Santa Fe. The health department says probably they're going to have to dig it out and get rid of it.
Well, wait a minute. Oil is a necessary resource. I believe, you know, we've begun drilling again in different places. Why not here in the middle? Can't homeless people in the fashion of Native Americans seize the resources and, sell their way out of poverty?
Yeah, but, you know, you got to realize if there's anything of value under there, they're going to be moved out and somebody else is going to benefit from that. It's sort of like what happened repeatedly in the history of this country with the Native American population.
I'm being facetious, but of course they could also put this into barrels and do some fire barrels at night to keep warm.
It was this darndest thing. There's just this big hole that emerged, and then people started sticking sticks down there and bringing them up, and, you know, they were coated in black oily tar. And they're like, you know, asking me, what do you think this is here?
But no mammoths have been found yet, I think.
We haven't found any mammoths.
How many people are actually living in this area? How many immigrants are living in this?
Well, you probably have about 150 people.
So it's a total of 300 counting both encampments.
I would say, you know, there people come and go, but it appears to be about that many.
Well, let me ask you a bit about how these camps are run. Is it all just sort of laissez-faire, or is there some big authoritarian boss, or is there a tribal council, or is it, do the police run in and direct people around? How does it work?
Well, there is, at least from what I've been able to determine, Robert, I have not been able to determine any kind of structure, any kind of coordinating councils or anything like that. What you do have, though, is you'll have in this immigrant settlement, for example, you'll have people that maybe they've all come from Oaxaca in Mexico, and so they tend to stay together. And then you'll have a group that's from Michoacan, and you know, they might have a few houses in one little area. But, I mean, they all sort of get along, and they all look out for each other. But as far as I've been able to determine, and I honestly haven't really delved into that a whole lot, I haven't been able to figure out that they have any kind of...
Did they vote during the election?
Some of them did, yeah. There was... we did a concerted effort to get homeless people to vote, and looking at the rolls of voting people right in that area. Because if you're homeless, you could register, and you don't have to have a street address. You could say you live on this little piece of land.
Same is true in Santa Cruz, but were there any issues that it was useful for the homeless to vote on in terms of initiatives, or were there any council members running who actually had a real interest in, you know, and a meaningful difference with the current mayor? I guess his name is Autry.
Alan Autry. He's an actor. Really, there wasn't anything that just set the world on fire for them. There was one mayoral candidate that's a liberal Latino, very supportive of organized labor, that was supported by most of the progressive community, running against a Republican conservative
who won?
The Republican. Uh-huh. We've had 15 years now of Republican mayors back-to-back. We'll have at least another four.
Uh-huh. What about foreclosures in your area? In Ontario, California, that seemed to be a big factor in the growing of this tenth city last year in 2007, and which it was going still this spring, and I guess it was shrunk down by the authorities who decided they would clamp down. But are there a lot of foreclosures happening in Fresno? What's going on there?
They're everywhere. Everywhere in Fresno. Every block has houses that are abandoned, and a lot of those people end up on the street.
What about squats? Is there an active squatting movement, as there was in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, and probably still is now? Are people taking over buildings and, you know, using them either surreptitiously or openly?
Well, you know, Fresno, in downtown Fresno, there's this section that's the old industrial section of downtown Fresno that is very run down. There's a lot of old warehouses there. Most of them, or a lot of them, used to be like fruit packing sheds, just big open containers, you know, but they have a roof on them, and people live in those. But there has been no effort to organize homeless people, as far as I know, to go and take over buildings that have been abandoned or houses. And it probably happens, but on a much more anarchistic level than, you know, you don't hear any kind of movement about that, but it undoubtedly happens.
What's the hate crime situation like in Fresno? Are you seeing an increase here in Santa Cruz? There's sort of after the victory of Mayor Coonerty here in Santa Cruz, I regard him as essentially kind of the quintessence of the anti-homeless mayor, at least among the other candidates, compared to the other candidates running. There's been a nasty increase in anti-homeless fulminating in the forums on the Sentinel. That's the so-called newspaper of record or disrepute or whatever. But there's also been police crackdowns. There's been an increased number of ticketing. Has there been a change in police policies in the last few months after the victory of the last month after the victory of your Republican candidates?
I can't say that I've seen it. You know, the police have been pretty brutal towards the homeless people all the time. I haven't noticed any uptick of that, you know, in the last month or two.
And then along that line, what about, though I've said, and you said that, you know, that you successfully turned back an explicit camping ban, you turned back the median, no panhandling on the median law. We have no panhandling after dark, no panhandling within 14 feet of a changemaker, 50 feet of a changemaker. We have a whole bunch of stuff that you apparently have yet to get. You better, you know, check in with our authorities. What about the actual practice of people sleeping? Are they being harassed under all kinds of other laws for sleeping in public? Or are they able pretty much to say, hey, I'm sleeping here, leave me alone? And even though the Jones decision doesn't rule in the technical sense, the Jones settlement has produced the, you know, concerns about, in many large cities, Los Angeles, San Diego, Richmond, and now in Sacramento, where a new lawsuit is being filed up there, you know, the sense that people have to be left alone at night to sleep, otherwise it's cruel and unusual punishment under the federal constitution to go after them.
Well, all they've done here is in certain parts of Fresno, they will tell people to move on. For example, homeless people are more and more now, because there are more homeless people, and because some of them don't want to live in New Jack City and the other larger homeless encampments. They've moved up into sort of central downtown Fresno. And all that the city has done, as far as I can tell, is they have put up posters giving them a week to move out. And then they go in and clean out the encampments. Now, they take the property and store it for 90 days. And if the homeless people who lost the property can find out where it is, which is part of the problem, you know, they don't give them good instructions on where the stuff is being stored. But if they can get there now, the last time I went, about 2-3 weeks ago, the containers are like pristine. They're clean. There's only a few things in each one, and they're marked. You know, so if you lived on Mariposa by O Street, you can go to that container and get your property. Hold on, just a second, Robert.
Well, you sound as croaky in the throat as I am. You're listening to Mike Rhodes speaking to me from Fresno, California, about the aftermath of a successful lawsuit. The Kincaid lawsuit against the city and Caltrans, and a new lawsuit that's being pursued against poverty pimps there who are active in destroying homeless property, or have been. Also, what's happening with tent cities in Fresno, California, and what the situation is on the streets regarding sleeping bans. Looks like we need a coughing ban for you there, Mike. How you doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there.
Alrighty.
So I wanted to tell you one more thing, because there's something else that was interesting that that has come up here. And that is on H Street. I was telling you about that oil container that's going to be removed. So I was talking to one of the city council members' aides, and they said, well, the Santa Fe Railroad had asked them or asked the city police to go in and clear out the homeless. And they, the city council person said, well, we don't want to do that. We want to deal with this in a different way. What we would like to do is to find a place for the people who are living there to go that would be better than what they have. What they're looking for is some property that's owned by the city or the county where they can renovate it and move homeless people into. And this is a part, they say, this is a part of their plan to move in the direction of housing first. And, you know, we've had Philip Mangano down here, Bush's homeless czar. He sort of sold the city his song and dance about providing housing for chronically homeless people.
And again, the idea of housing first means you don't make it a clean and sober house. You don't demand people go into programs. First you give them housing, and then you work on what comes next, right?
Right. You know, whatever issues that they face. Somebody might need job training or go back to school. Whatever it is, they have a house or apartment to live in, and then they, deal with whatever they do need to do to, you know, make some money so that they can stay in a nice house. But there's no time limits on it. There's no, if you have mental health issues, you don't have to suddenly become, have done away with your mental health issue to move into decent housing. It's just whatever condition you find yourself in, you get housing, and then you deal with whatever comes next. Anyway, this is, from what I can gather, talking to our city council members and their aides, that's the direction that we're heading in. And I was talking to Mayor-elect Ashley Swearingen yesterday about this, and she says she's committed to going down that path, which I think is better than the path that we were on before. It might not be perfect, but...
Yeah, but again, you know, I know we've talked a bit about, and it sounds like it could be in theory better, but I've seen a lot of debate among on the Fresno Homeless Advocates email list about, you know, what's actually going on. And you've been very skeptical about what has actually been happening in the city with the, I don't know how much money the federal government has already kicked down to Mayor Autry to deal with homelessness, and I think you pointed out very little of that has been spent, right?
Well, yeah, and that was one of the things I was talking to Ashley about yesterday, was that there's the city council budgeted $3 million for homeless housing, and they haven't used $1 of it. It's been there for a year. They simply carried it over to the next budget year.
Well, they're being cautious, Mike. They're just trying to make sure that the right kind of people go into that housing.
Well, here's my thought, and I kind of need to leave it here because I've got to go. But I'm actually, somewhat optimistic that there's going to be changes. There's a commitment, a public commitment made by both the county and the city to stop the policies of the past, attacking homeless people, just pushing them from one place to another, giving them bus fare out of town, hoping that they'll either, go into a program at the rescue mission or die, basically not having any policy that's going to deal with homeless people's needs at all. So now they have recognized that this wasn't working, obviously. Clearly it wasn't working because there's more homeless people now than there ever has been before. And that it's expensive for them. they have publicly made a commitment to change that course. There's been, one of these 10-year plans drawn up. There's a new mayor coming in. Everybody says they're committed to provided housing. And this is the first case where they've actually said to me that instead of simply telling these people to move on, they are going to get them a nice place to live. So we will continue watching that, and hopefully the next time I talk to you, I'll be able to tell you that that actually did happen.
Well, hopefully that, you know, I don't think it's your watching that'll produce it, but something else, like the kind of activity you did in creating the lawsuit, having the homeless marathon come to town, doing the kind of protest and presence at City Hall that defeated the camping ordinance mm-hmm. and the panhandling ordinance and got porta potty out to, New Jack City. And it got, I guess, a new lawsuit against the poverty pimps headed by Larry Arce down there. So I commend you, Mike, and I don't know if watching is going to do much. I mean, it's always nice to hear the truth of what's going on, but I think you can make the truth probably a little more palatable by adding a little muscle, you know what I mean, sweetheart?
Yeah, well, we're always lobbying them in multiple ways, so... You know, all I'm saying is that I'll talk to you next time, and I'll tell you what happened.
Hey, thank you. We're talking with Mike Rhodes. And again, if you want to reach Mike, you can go to the following website.
Well, there's two places you can go to. One is the Indie Media website in the Bay Area, indiebay.org, and then go to the Central Valley, and you'll see several of the stories I've written there. Or you can go to www.fresnoalliance.com/home, and there you'll find the list of all the articles about what's been going on in Fresno over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Mike, thank you for taking the time and ruining your voice again, and I fully sympathize because my voice is going too.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
Thanks a lot, man.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So if you're interested in commenting on anything you've heard or talking about how Santa Cruz's situation might or might not be similar to or different from that of Fresno, you can call in because you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. You can call in at 427-3772, 427-3772. Comments off air can be dialed in at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. That's also the number to call if you want to get a hold of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group I work with that now meets every Wednesday at 9:30. We're trying to meet at the new Sub Rosa Anarchist Coffee House, but times are getting colder, and when it rains, we're probably going to retreat to the courthouse. But we will attempt to huddle there for the next week or two and see how it goes. The Anarchist Coffee House, the Sub Rosa Coffee House, is on Pacific Avenue, about a block from Laurel toward the beach across from the Saturn Cafe. And, of course, the Human Rights Organization, an equally reputable group and sometimes and often better attended than HUFF, is a group that holds its meetings at the Taqueria Vallarta. That's the cafe outdoor, relatively, I would say, reasonably priced Mexican joint that sits at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, across from Chianti's and Kitty Corner from Quiznos, that meets every Saturday, 2 o'clock. It's called the Human Rights Organization, and there's some good people there working hard on, again, basic issues of the sleeping ban, criminalizing the homeless, harassment downtown, the laws that criminalize poor people, and so forth. And some of the things that I've talked about and some others have been discussing have been a kind of a general move to reclaim public spaces, both for the homeless and others, and to challenge the practice of simple police repression as a way of dealing with so-called social problems. So, for instance, as I mentioned on the air, I was ticketed at the Metro bus station for refusing to leave when told to do so by a guard after having informed them about their religious sermons coming over the loudspeakers. I got them finally to turn those off, but I, you know, insisted on continuing to chat with two homeless guys 3 feet from the public sidewalk on the open to the public metro area in front of the Metro Transit Authority, the walkway there, and I got a citation for it. So thinking of a week from Wednesday, starting at the place where we're doing our meeting with Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at the Sub Rosa Cafe, just doing a kind of a walk, stroll to the metro and to a few other places that where public spaces are being threatened by repressive action, like, oh, I don't know, the Drum Circle, even though the Drum Circle has been successful in taking back the Wednesday Drum Circle area next to the Farmers Market, there still is the constant reminder that the city regards this as their fence-offable territory, which is what they do every Wednesday morning. Then I think we're considering going to the police station, where the police somehow feel that they aren't subject to public scrutiny. They can videotape you as you walk in, but if you try and videotape them, they will refuse to serve you. That's happened to me there before, and I think with a large enough crowd there, we can require them to engage in equitable dealings, or at least embarrass them if they don't. Also, up for grabs is going to be the public spaces downtown in front of New Leaf Market, which has become a privatized area, although often the two merchants who are usually out there, the Alfresco's Marilyn and the Cafe Campesino's David, and have been, you know, not unreasonable in allowing people access to those spaces. So that's coming up a week from Wednesday, a march to restore public spaces. We have a caller. Let's see what's cooking here. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, is this Robert North?
It is, and you're on the air.
Oh, hi, this is Naomi.
Hey, Naomi.
Hey, I was listening to all the things that Mike Rhodes said, and it was really interesting. And I wanted to know, how does Santa Cruz compare in terms of, I guess, activism? What are the challenges that that homeless people here are facing? I mean, I'm surprised that we haven't also gotten, you know, our stuff together, and it, like Fresno and their lawsuits and things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting, Naomi, and I know you... you are working up at UCSC both as a student and as a journalist, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You're writing for the City on a Hill Press weekly newspaper.
Right.
And you're doing a particular research into the issue of homelessness in Santa Cruz.
Right.
And I'm glad that you are. The, you know, it's a complicated question, but it's interesting. Fresno is, frankly, a reactionary town. And it's kind of like... the Democrats in Congress were not were able to block the FISA spying bill when they were in the minority. I don't know if you remember that, if you've been following that whole thing. You have to turn down your radio, by the way, or else you will be confused. Are you still with me?
Yeah, I had to turn it down right now because it was distracting me.
Yeah, no problem. That's always, I should be reminding people, and I'm not. I apologize. Turn it down. I hear feedback. Are you still getting fed back there? Okay.
Oh, no, I think I should be fine. It's probably where I'm at. I'm in Felton, and our reception's pretty
good. Yeah, no problem. Well, let me try and answer your question. The problem is you have a bunch of people who are part of the Democratic Party who masquerade or persuade themselves that they are very liberal. I mean, they vote for Obama. They favor, getting out of Iraq, even though Obama isn't really committed himself to that in any meaningful way. You know, they regard him as the lesser of two evils, and they're members of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. But when it comes to the local issues of poverty and poor people, they are as bad as the Republicans, in the sense that they set up a few token programs, but they are generally we have what may be the worst sleeping ban in the state. In terms of the actual writing of the ordinance, in terms of its enforcement, police don't spend all their time enforcing the ordinance. We estimate 90 tickets a month. I don't know what the exit we found about 6 months ago. There were 90 citations every month, or 60 to 90, something like that.
For homeless people? They gave homeless people tickets?
Yes, for sleeping at night, even though there's no legal place for them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to Mike Rotkin, who supports this law, and he's a community studies person you may be familiar with. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's up at UCSC. He's a lecturer there. He's also the elders, probably the oldest and longest-termed member on the Santa Cruz City Council. I call him the shadow mayor because I think he's the person that Mayor Coonerty goes to in order to get his, if not to get his marching orders, at least to sort of check things out with him and so forth. The guy who really knows what's going on and controls things in the city council. But what
what Rotkin will tell you is that, oh, well, you know, the police in Carmel will run people out of town, but here in Santa Cruz, we insist that they follow this law, which says no sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. And therefore, we're much more liberal, you see. Or we'll tell you, well, we'll wake you up, we'll hassle you, we'll give you a ticket, but somewhere down the road, we'll let you write it off if you go to the homeless service center, get a letter, prove that there was a shelter, there was no shelter space that night, take it to court, get the judge to agree, and so forth. Now, they don't do that in Los Angeles anymore. It's illegal. Or unconstitutional, illegal, I guess you'd say, because of the court settlement, to arrest or ticket a homeless person for violating a sleeping ban at night in Los Angeles. But Santa Cruz hasn't reached that point. Strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, do you have any, I guess, any opinions of why that is? I mean, why?
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think the reason is that people in positions of power have become entrenched, and they are. You know, it's hard to say. I don't know what George Au or Barry Swinson or other people who are, you know, significant developers and property owners in Santa Cruz actually think about this law. You know, that's one of my faults. I should be actually, you know, interviewing them, and maybe I will be. That's a good idea. In fact, if anybody wants to step on board and let's hear what they say. You know, the real power brokers in town are the people who have the money, who own the most property, and who influence the city council, who make the biggest donations to the campaigns of people like Coonerty. But all I can see from what has happened is that there is just a general belief among people who are so-called progressives that they would lose power if they tried to humanize the situation around the sleeping ban. You see this with someone like Catherine Byers, who won the election. I don't know if you followed Catherine Byers. She's a woman who was mayor twice. When she was not in power, when she was a minority on the city council, she spoke out on behalf of homeless people. Once she got into the majority and there was a real chance of a sleeping ban change, she backed up and said things like, there's just no place for them, stalled. Held long, lengthy hearings that went nowhere, and eventually very few of the reforms, none of the significant reforms that were proposed, happened. I don't really have a good answer for you. You're saying, why hasn't it happened? Some would say that there is not sufficient organization among homeless activists. Some would say that the Democrats, the progressives, are hypocritical on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say that the media, the students could be a large factor in actually pressing this issue forward, and they were 20 years ago. They were arrested in droves in sleepouts supporting the homeless, kind of civil rights-type sleepouts, like sit-ins. We had sleepouts violating this law, and the police would arrest us. We'd all go to jail. You know, then we'd go to court, and then we'd have to go do community service. It made quite a stink. But what eventually happened was the liberals came forward and said there was, for example, an ongoing sleep out in front of the post office in 1989 or 90. You can actually find this, some of the interviews from this period of time, if you go to my website and you at the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and listen to some of the older shows, or what's called flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that there was an active civil rights movement on the streets by homeless people who essentially insisted they slept every night outside visibly. And people kept arresting them. The police kept arresting them, I should say, not for anything criminal, but for being, you know, doing human things. I mean, we have the same situation that happens now, but people are not together. You know, it's an important question you raise. I don't have clear answers. I assign blame to people in positions of political power, because they have the power to change it. But since they're obviously not changing it, it's up to us, journalists, activists, students who are concerned, other members of the community, to make the changes. I mean, winter is setting in. We're going to have a cold and wet winter at some point, although it's supposed to be dry at least for the next few days. And, you know, more people are going to suffer. More people are going to die. And, you know, more people are going to lose their civil rights this winter unless we do something, and probably even if we do something, but it might change things in the future. So,
I'm sorry, I don't want to take up too much time, but you mentioned Catherine Byers.
Yes.
What do you think is influencing the city council? Because I talked a little bit to Ryan Coonerty.
Ryan Coonerty, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he said, well, you know, homeless people on the streets, makes it feel unsafe, and that it, you know, causing people not to come to Santa Cruz.
Is that what he said to you? That's interesting. I hope you recorded that.
Well, a lot of people heard it, so I don't know.
Interesting. I mean, that is the perception of some merchants, and Coonerty is a merchant first and foremost. He comes from, the bookshop Santa Cruz Coonerty clan downtown. Mm-hmm. And he's buddies with the people in the downtown association, supported by them.
Mm-hmm.
This notion, there are other people who think that, they think several things. They think that people like street performers and the street culture in Santa Cruz actually is a tourist draw in some respects, because it's unusual. It's not typical. I mean, it's typical of some towns like Arcata, maybe Venice, but not towns like Carmel, Monterey, even San Francisco. It's not the same kind of thing. I mean, So in a way, there are some who would dispute that it's detrimental to business, but there's some people who say, those dirty, ugly, frightening homeless people out front, they depress me, and they're going to drive away my customers. Well, I have two responses. One is prove it, and the second is tough shit. It really is, because to me, human rights takes a place in front of the fears and apprehensions of merchants. Who are already, we're in a culture where we're in a recession here. We're losing money. They're losing money, and they are looking around for people to blame. And unfortunately, why not blame the guy who's on the sidewalk? He must be to blame. Who wants him sitting on our sidewalk? That's my sidewalk. I'm a businessman. I pay taxes. Well, it's not your sidewalk. It's the community's sidewalk. Everybody has a right to it. So.
Mm-hmm. And you can stop me at any time. Like I can just hold my questions for later. But if these people are being pushed out of the city, they're going to be like on the outskirts of the city. What are they really trying to accomplish by, pushing homeless people out when they have nowhere to go?
Well, it's just NIMBYism, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
It's the idea that somewhere else, not here, get these bums out of town. Where the word bum is liberally applied.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously the answer is, that I don't think it works. I think if you squeeze in one place, the balloon goes somewhere else. But, in a way, it's a selfish kind of siege mentality. If you get rid of poor people, then maybe you'll encourage wealthier people to feel more comfortable, because they won't have to feel guilty about their wealth. They won't have to feel apprehensive about anger that sometimes people will feel when they see, wealth parading ostentatiously next to poverty, or wealth ignoring poverty, or just, it just becomes difficult because people, get crowded, they get forced out of their houses, the rents go up, Santa Cruz has no renter protection laws, it has, we could pass our own form of rent control, although we have this obnoxious statewide vacancy decontrol Ellis Act, which has a bad effect on that, but we could still, do renter protections that have been pressed for a number of years by people like Donna Dice, the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, who is now, she had her arm broken by a police officer. She lives in her RV. That police officer, Sergeant Lamas, is still on the force, and she is being charged with resisting arrest. It's a strange kind of Alice in Wonderland inversion that we have here.
Yeah, definitely. Alrighty. Well, thank you. I'm going to continue tuning in and see if I can come up with more questions.
Sure, and I invite other people to do the same. And also, your article, which you're writing for City on a Hill Press, should be appearing when?
Oh, December 4th. So definitely take a look at it.
Are we talking about a half-page article or a two-page article?
I think it's going to be a half-page, but like I said, I'm going to be trying to work on two stories on the same thing, so... there'll be two stories probably in this newspaper.
Do you want homeless people and other activists who listen to the show to be able to contact you by phone?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Put out your number if you'd like.
It's 909-781-3510. And if you want to contact me through email, it is nrroderig@gmail.com.
Give me that one more time, the email.
No problem. That's nrroderig@gmail.com.
Okay. nrroderig@gmail.com. And your phone number is 909-781-3510. 3510. We're talking with Naomi of City on the Hill, right?
Yes, that's it.
Well, that's good. I appreciate your calling, Naomi. Feel free to call back at any point.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the number to call. I've also invited trolls from who kind of trudge up and down the not people who live outside, who are poor and homeless and have to live under bridges or try to, but people who live indoors and try to derail discussions on the internet with attacks on activists. That's what we call internet trolls, to call in and talk, because there's been a lot of back and forth discussion on the Sentinel website about the last Wednesday, a week ago, Wednesday's article, which some interpret as literally inviting people to kill homeless people. I would kill to clean up our downtown, or the more or less the final phrase in this particular article by Genevieve Bookwalter. So there's some people who are just very angry at homeless people and the activists who support them, or their, at least their right to civil rights, and who they don't like to get involved in real discussions, but they don't mind denouncing the activists. And here's your chance to denounce me on the air. If you'd like, feel free to call in and do a little denouncing. Although, again, I'd like to steer this toward what the specific concerns are. How can anybody reasonably oppose reforming the sleeping ban law? I just can't really understand it myself. It's like saying, I guess there are arguments for slavery, there are arguments for the subordination of women, there are arguments for segregation, but, you know, I like to think it were beyond that in Santa Cruz, and of course we're not, and that's really the problem. Let's take a rhythmic break while I recharge my batteries. And that's the Pasties, Punk as Folk. I like it the way it is. A quick call from Naomi. Wanted to correct the email for those of you who wanted to reach her by email in order to pass on your experiences for her Sandy Hill Press article. And it has to be said that these are usually one-time articles. Naomi said she's going to be pursuing the subject, which I'm pleased to hear, but often one intends that and it doesn't really happen. So we'll see if that actually works. I do appreciate Naomi's taking the energy to call in. Her email is NRRODRIG. I believe she's listening. If I'm wrong, let me know. NRRODRIG@gmail.com. And if anybody didn't catch that, please give me a call afterward if you want to get information about any of the guests I've had on the show or call-ins or other phone numbers you may not have heard or email addresses. You can get me to call you back. And I will call you back if you call me at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. So, now let's turn to the much-delayed interviews. I got plenty of them, and I'll be playing plenty more on Sunday. Looks like I've gotten through a lot of the show, so a lot of them aren't going to get played today. But let's see what we can do. This is from last Wednesday, and these interviews kind of speak for themselves.
I'm not going to talk to you about the big recording, so I'll be back. Yeah.
So what happened?
We were told we
He's not afraid to talk.
We were told we could stay on the porch of the Greek Orthodox Church.
Right.
And then last night the cops came up and gave us all tickets for being there. Never told us.
Name of the cop, do you know?
You
probably have the ticket. We can take a look at that.
It's on my ticket, yeah.
Yeah. And again, we're talking with...
181.
Right. What's your name?
Mia Cook.
Sorry, Mia. I know we talked again before last night. So, about what time of night was this?
About 1:30, 2 o'clock.
And what was the nature of, how did it go down? Give me the blow-by-blow.
They just came up there and said that the church had decided that they didn't want us there. And they proceeded to ticket everyone.
How many were there?
There were four of us.
And did you have any other legal place to go? Did they offer it to you?
No, they offered us nowhere to go.
How many?
And the tickets we're talking about, of course, for those who don't know, are sleeping ban tickets. Tickets that make it illegal to sleep between the hours of 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning on any public property or on private property that is in a front yard or side yard and exposed to the street.
Police officers were involved.
Two.
You know, and you say you have the name of one of them?
Not the name, but, it would be on my ticket.
Okay, you're going to check your ticket here. Yeah, I'm looking at your citation. It is for camping, which, by the way, you weren't doing. You were sleeping, which is, it's the wrong code section. It's C that they've written down, and not A, which is the appropriate section. It is illegal to sleep on private property, even with the permission of the church, if it's visible. So it's, but it's usually outrageous for the police to do this because there's no legal place for people to go. And in fact, some of us began working on a lawsuit several years ago, but then lacked the resources to continue it. I would encourage you to wait. You wait 30 days because a ticket won't go on the computer for 30 days. You probably want to go to the homeless service center and get a letter, if you can, that says there's no place to sleep on the night of November 12th or the morning of November 13th, which is today. It looks like it's the 12th. It was the date at about 11:44 or 12:44 or something, not sure. And then you can take this ticket to court and get it disqualified. I always suggest disqualifying the referee. His name is Commissioner Basket. She's the pro-police judicial official that you would normally see. But the thing to do is wait a month and then give a call to Huff or come to a Huff meeting, which meets every Wednesday, 9:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is up near the Bike Church, if you know where that is. It's at Pacific and Soquel Streets, 9:30 in the morning on Wednesday morning. But, you know, you should wait a month because otherwise this won't be on the computer anyway. So, go get a letter in the next week or so for this date saying that there's no, you know, there was no legal place for you to go because there wasn't last night, as far as I know. That's my suggestion. Comments, Mia?
Oh, no, just thank you very much.
You're welcome. So you were told you could do this. Who told you?
The pastor of the church there.
When did he or she tell you?
It was a he, and it was the people who were there initially that they told that to.
And how long ago
was
that?
About 3 days ago, the guy came by and said that if people were going to sleep there, that was fine, but that they couldn't smoke on the porch.
Okay.
And because there were some people that were smoking.
When you got tickets, there were some people who were smoking? Or?
No, there were nobody was smoking. Everybody was asleep.
Right. Four people got tickets?
Yep.
How many women, how many men?
Two women and two men.
And what was the average age of the people getting tickets?
I would say 50s.
Say it again.
In their 50s.
Well, you should have learned by now that you don't have to sleep at night if you have enough willpower. Remember, walking around can be very energizing.
Well, they apparently think so. They should stay up all night and all day.
Get back to me in a month.
Okay.
Or before, if this happens again.
Okay.
The cops today are out in force, just doing, ticketing every little petty thing. I think somebody got a ticket for riding their bike. I don't know what's going on down there, but they're just...
Two bike tickets.
More police presence today than I've seen in the last 3 days.
And what's your name? First name.
Sequoia.
Sequoia. You're here in front of Borders going home for the holidays. Anything helps? And you have a picture of what looks like, what, your family?
Yes, my son and I.
And you have an abalone show with a little money in it, a nice-looking scarf, and you're playing a flute with a feather.
Yes, Native American flute.
You want to give us a little demonstration? Or?
No.
No? Okay.
So, yeah, what I usually do is sell jewelry. I make jewelry and wrap crystals, but you definitely can't do that here. So I didn't know what to do, so they said playing flute music was okay as long as you abided by certain rules and regulations, which I am doing.
You actually are allowed to make jewelry, but
you
they
can make it, but you can't sell it, so there's a fine line there.
You can both display it for donation, and you can actually sell it, but they inform people that you can't because they have a variety of notions. But in fact, the last time they tried to arrest someone for this and he took it to court, he got a $15,000 settlement, but it took many years for him to get it. His name was Mike True, and he was arrested for displaying his artwork, which was his CDs. He was playing music and selling the CDs for donation.
Well, the first day I was here, I put my jewelry out, not knowing the rules, kind of a little nervous about it. I did sell a few pieces, but the downtown hospitality gentleman came and asked, "Are you selling?" And I was like, "No." And about 2 minutes later, there was a police car right behind me, but I had already put my stuff away because I realized that you can't do that here, which I wasn't sure, but I learned very quickly.
Well, actually, I was at the farmer's market yesterday, and there were people displaying their jewelry. And
I saw them walking around, actually carrying jewelry.
Right. I mean, it's you know, it depends on... Right now, there's a crackdown on people on the streets, as you may have noticed.
Yeah.
As well as people sleeping at the churches with permission, apparently, of the church membership, you know, ownership.
I think without giving them an alternative place to go, that what are we supposed to do? You know, I live in my car, and...
Disappear! Come on, you're not as much of a human being as the people with money around here. You should know that, for heaven's sake.
I live in my car, and I've gotten, not in this city, but in other cities, 3 o'clock in the morning, people banging on my door. You can't park here, you can't sleep here, it's against the law. So this whole... You know, legality issue of it's illegal to be homeless. Okay, are you going to give me a job? You know, I had an interview last week. I didn't get the job, so I'm still out here. I don't...
And you're sleeping illegally, aren't you?
In my van.
You criminal.
I am breaking the ordinance of the sleeping in my car rule, yes.
I'm afraid we're going to have to tail you, track you down, cite you, jail you, and do whatever else is necessary to make sure that you obey the law.
And I'm not your typical homeless face. You know, I don't do drugs, I don't smoke pot, I don't smoke cigarettes, I don't drink. I'm pretty boring. You know, I'm just trying to make a living, enough to pay my bills and have some food.
How long have you been living this gypsy-like, nomadic existence?
Since last February. I lived in Mount Shasta, and I worked at a resort there, but they cut my hours back so much that I couldn't afford the commute anymore, so I just ended up quitting.
And you also support a child?
Well, he's with my mom right now because I can't do that. So, yeah, I would if I could.
Any further... anything else you'd like to say?
No, nothing else. Not at this time.
All right.
Thank you, Dan.
We've been talking with?
Sequoia.
Thanks, Sequoia. You say it's intensified today, Sequoia.
Right. I've seen a much stronger police presence today than the last 3 days. Before, I would sit out here, you know, most of the day, I'd see one or two policemen in, you know, 6-8 hours. And already they're in pairs, and they've been up and down the street several times, and it's only been a few hours. And they're giving tickets, and they're talking to people, and they're moving people along. They weren't doing that in the last 3 days. So.
There you go. Indeed. Well, if you see anything untoward or any more reports coming in, just let me know.
Okay, yeah.
Thanks, Sequoia.
With
someone. It was at the Downtown Association meeting, and what I've gotten out of this, and this person doesn't want to be identified, but he or she has told me that there's a discussion of the buddy system, so when a merchant or a resident on the member of the Downtown Association has a problem with someone on the avenue and wants to talk to them about behavior which may not be illegal but which is uncomfortable in some way or disconcerting or bothersome, that they simply go and address the person, tell them the problem. And apparently some of the people at the meeting were reluctant to do that, so there was a discussion of using the buddy system, bringing somebody else on board.
What I'm talking about here is a report from the Downtown Association's closed meeting. The Downtown Association is the gang of merchants who cooked up the original downtown ordinances that criminalize a lot of innocent behavior downtown and give the police massive selective enforcement powers. It was zipped through the city council some years ago, and there have been some worse laws added to it. Downtown Association is now headed by a guy called Chip, who actually called me today and wanted to have a meeting, but he said he was busy working on the downtown, I don't know, is it the Thanksgiving parade? Is it the Christmas lights? I'm not sure. But he had his other concerns, and I said, fine, you know, I'll meet whenever you want. You know, I'll be, call me up, and we'll meet if you want. I mean, I'm just one person who's, you know, concerned about police misconduct, and we didn't really take it any further. But the Downtown Association meeting was closed to everybody but the Downtown Association members, according to this Downtown Association member I'm talking to. And it came the day after this rather, the same day actually, as the nasty article in the Wednesday, November 12th, I believe, or 13th newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which portrayed homeless people in a very kind of vicious light and called for a crackdown on people downtown. Just as you heard Naomi, the City on a Hill Press writer, describe her discussion with Coonerty, those same kinds of comments were highlighted by Coonerty, you know, in the Sentinel. And Coonerty reportedly stopped his subscription to the Sentinel in protest, but if Naomi's comments are accurate, he's saying the same thing that the Sentinel is quoting him as saying, the kind of, you know, these homeless people make people uncomfortable and so forth. I'm sure he isn't using the word homeless. He's saying this, it's the other kind of bad people who aren't really homeless. They just look homeless, or they look, you know, they're just grubby. Or they're people who we want to be able to target, you know, that sort of thing. And indeed, if people are abusive to other people downtown, assaultive to other people downtown, steal from, intimidate, or extort from other people downtown, that is a, you know, a pot of a different color. We're not talking about with that. We're talking about people sitting within 50 feet of an ATM. We're talking about people gathering in groups. We're talking about people occasionally spit on the sidewalk. I mean, that really upsets some merchants. I talked to one woman who was really upset by that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's not a terribly sanitary practice, but it happens. And there are a lot of other far more unsanitary things that happen downtown having to do with, you know, the internal combustion engine, that are far more likely to get you sick, that are far more annoying and disturbing and actually environmentally hostile. You know, it's pick and choose and get rid of the people you don't like. That's the problem. Anyway, here's more of my report on the Downtown Association's closed-door meeting.
Another thing that was proposed, according to this person who's monitoring what I'm saying so that I'm hopefully making no mistakes, is that if individuals have real concerns, that they act like other ne'er-do-wells like Robert Norris does and go to the city council, give them an email, show up and talk, buttonhole a council person, whatever. And then I was also told the meeting had about 50 to 60 folks, and that it went on for a couple hours, and that there was an agenda printed, but that mostly it was kind of vague, and a lot of people were given a chance to speak. It was run by some group like the Social Legislative Committee of the Downtown Association, which had raised these problems. I continue to gather information more when I get it.
There we have the Mickey Mouse problem again. My apologies. That is because I switched speeds. Hang in there. A little bit of musical interlude, and I'll be right back.
I spoke of tearing paper, destroyed the evidence, ran my arm over the counter, and broke each bottle of glass on the cement. I got a paper cut, a paper cut. A little bit, but it hurts so.
We're down here at front of New Leaf Market, actually Alfresco's, or no, Cafe Campesino, about 8:20 on Thursday evening, the 13th, talking with
Alice
and her dog
Buddy.
Alice and Buddy. And Alice, you say you were pointing out a woman up the street in a blue poncho who I identify as an activist, Coral. You say had some problems with police?
Yes, she was sitting right over there, or standing right over there, feeding the homeless people beans and rice, and cops came up to her and started harassing her about, you know, feeding the people, but they said, we're talking to you about the trash. You know, she had a to-go container that had a little bit of beans and rice for the dogs to eat out of. And she had cubs sitting next to her container of food, and they started harassing her about that. And
how many police officers were there?
There was four or five.
Four or five. And how many squad cars?
Two.
And were they blocking the road here, more or less?
They were...
One parked
was
over there.
Right there, and one was parked over there.
One in front of Sitar, and one in front of the shop across the street from Sitar.
And so they started talking with her, and they, from her standing there, they eventually wound up to her standing up against the newspaper box with them surrounding her.
What did she say, if anything?
She says, well, are you giving me a ticket for feeding the homeless people? Because if you are, I'll gladly go to jail for that.
Uh-huh.
I was like, no, we're talking to you about the trash.
Oh, trash. It's the garbage collectors, eh?
Yeah. And so they're talking to her, and then next thing we know, they leave because, from what she said, they said that they got a call for a, 5150.
That's right. Someone who's being held against their will in a psych ward, or do they want to take off the streets allegedly for their own good because they're danger to others, danger to themselves, or gravely disabled. Though I see there's still a squad car parked up Lincoln Street, and there's another one parked up the way here on Pacific Avenue. As I walked up, I see a police officer walking back to his car, it looks like, on Lincoln Street.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of this? Did you make any commentary yourself? Were many people involved?
There was a bunch of people that was over there, and some people that was standing in this area right here.
You're pointing to the Bank of America ATM, and also the area near this fenced-off trespass sign that used to be public space, but thanks to New Leaf Market and the Redevelopment Agency, no longer is, at night anyway.
Yeah. And so there was about six people that saw it and was commenting on how messed up it was because she wasn't doing anything wrong. She was just feeding some people, and there just happened to be a couple of cubs sitting on the cement next to the food that she was giving out.
Did she offer the police any food?
Yeah.
She did. Well, let's see if we can get some first-hand information. Is this the criminal in question?
Yes.
What is your name, madam?
I refuse to give it. No.
Oh, call the police.
Who wants to know?
We'll call you Poncho Woman. And you have a look like a bucket or something and a bag of Lay's potato chips.
A hot cocoa.
Well, we might have to bribe you with a cup of cocoa.
You think?
What happened here tonight, woman?
Well, her man came and said they're giving out tickets for feeding the hungry, and so I didn't think that much about it. And then about, I don't know, I was just going ahead and feeding, and the dog wanted some food, and I left a plate of food.
Buddy,
down
the dog.
Mm-hmm. The great dog right here, the guide dog, and
the socializing dog.
Yes. And dogs deserve to eat, and so he came over and asked me if that was all my stuff.
Who came over?
Officer D. Forbes.
Ah, yes.
Officer
Dan
Schoen.
Forbes.
Oh, you know Dan Forbes.
Might be Dan Forbes.
Yeah, D. Forbes. He said he's the...
According to Officer Forbes, one of the Officer Forbeses, if there are two officers, there are two officers, 198 and 199, according to what... Was it Dave Forbes or Dan Forbes? That they're brothers, apparently, separated by 2 years. I actually interviewed one of them, and that interview will be played on Sunday when I come back on the show, and actually a new show on Sunday morning. And I invite you to join me then at 9:30. We'll play a little more, but coming into the studio shortly will be the musical mogul Uncle Dennis, who will be dragging you from the cream to the dregs. So you got to watch out for that guy, unless you like music and environmental reports. Best to turn off your radio immediately. Actually, he's actually got a lot of good music and some interesting reports, I'm told. I don't usually listen, but of course, I don't listen to the radio much. I'm more of a book kind of guy.
He usually work down here. He's an investigator.
Oh, he's investigating feeding the dogs? What's going on?
And Officer Schoenfeld and then Warren.
Heard about the incident a little while ago.
I didn't have a chance to get to the phone. He asked, is there anything I can do to help you cooperate? And I said, yes, get me a phone. And he said he couldn't do that, but he wanted me to tell him my name. And first he asked me, do you want to go to jail? And I said, on what basis?
Sure, I'd love it.
He goes, yeah, take me right now. It's for feeding the hungry. I go, first I could do it. Take me to the magistrate. Well, that could be in the morning. It could be arranged. You want to go to jail tonight? Under what basis? You know, and I ask if I was being detained. Yes. Well, can I see your ID? I don't have an ID, which I don't. I don't have any pockets. I had pockets. I didn't carry my ID with me. So, I go...
Did you say what the reasonable suspicion was? What he was investigating you for?
I was littering. And he said, I'm standing right by all the stuff here. He goes, is that all your stuff? He said, yes. Yeah. Well, get rid of it. I said, okay. So I picked up the suit, the beans and rice container. Well, is that your stuff too? And I said, no, it's not really my stuff. And he goes, well, you're using it. It must be yours.
And then, Officer Forbes. This was Officer Forbes talking.
Yeah. So this young man that was just here with Suzanne, who doesn't want to be known as her name because she's getting too well known, came by. He goes, hey, can I have some beans and rice? So that kind of interrupted their thought process. So I said, yes, you may. So I gave him some, and he goes, oh, you used that. Must be yours. No, it's not mine. Well, pick it up.
Oh, wow.
So I go, I did pick it up. And kept making a steal about the cups that were seated. Well, you can't leave that there. It's littering.
You need to go?
Then they were kind of following me around to the trash can. I was going over there, and I go, am I free to go? No. Then I go, I got to write you a citation, but I got to validate that you're who you say you are. What's your name? And I said, are you going to promise that you won't write me a ticket if I give you my name? And he said, yes, I want to give you a warning. I don't really want to get hung up in all this. So I just want to give you a warning. And I go,
warning about what, littering?
Yes, I guess so. Because he said that there's too many people leaving trash down here. He doesn't disapprove that I'm helping people, and then wondered how long I've been doing it. And it's good to feed people, but it's the litter. And
how much litter was actually involved here? Were you creating a huge mess, Miss whatever your name is?
Well, no, it was some cups and the dog dish.
which I picked up. I said, oh, yeah, this dog, you know, he can't pick up his own trash. I said, I pick up litter after people all the time anyway. And so he said, well, I don't really want to make it hard on us or people like you, you know, good.
That's why I spent 15 minutes harassing you, right?
Yes, he needed three people. And
how many police officers were there?
There were three. One stood off, standoffish. He didn't really want to be there. He just kind of had to walk up. Because he'd already been there talking to, I think Lather is his name, and he showed in the articles, and he told the officer that he was going to go to city council with a lot of people next week because of this threat in the paper by Korea, who said, this place is to die for, we got to do something about it, it's to kill for.
And we're listening to activist Coral from SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. She's also a Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, who was approached by the police and apparently detained for 15 minutes under suspicion of littering for feeding homeless people a week ago. Actually, it was a week ago. It was Thursday night, a week ago. So we'll be rejoining this.
Her show is Thursdays at 3.
Yeah, actually, her show was this afternoon at 3, so it's from 3 to 5. You can actually talk to her directly about this issue. Or join her as she engages in criminal feeding. But don't litter, you know, I guess, or don't feed or... I don't know. It's hard to say what's going on here, but I understand there was no harassment last night when people were feeding, and I will be going out on the streets right now to determine if anything is happening tonight by any reports, and I'll be reporting back to you on Sunday morning at 9:30 or even perhaps earlier. Also in the studio with me will be, or at least calling in, will be Anita Henry, who's an activist on the Measure K Committee, lowest enforcement priority for marijuana. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Remind you that at 2 o'clock on Saturday, it's the Human Rights Organization meeting at the Taqueria Vallarta. And you can also call me off-air with any reports at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks again, and good night.
My days are shaded gray, and my nights are shaded blue. My face is lined with worry, and my mind is split in two. I feel just like a man whose last real hope is gone. Morality and religion didn't teach me right from wrong. And I need a little something. Oh, just to mellow my days, 'cause I'm getting tired of acting. Life's one act to play. The world is changing fast. Ain't got time to think twice. Wanna keep on the ball? Then you've got to pay the price. You can't judge the future by looking at the past. And there ain't nobody out there who you can stop and ask. Oh, I need a little something. Just a mellow. My days, 'cause I'm getting tired of acting. And life's one act play. Some people think, oh yes they do, they've found the way. But there are a dime a dozen. See them every day. Some people are happy in their delusions. Oh, I wish sometime I could share their illusions, but nobody really knows what this life is all. Should have doubts, and sometimes I wonder what they are going to do when their cozy dreams are shattered and reality shows through. Oh, I need a little something. Just to mellow my days, but I'm getting tired of acting in life's one-act play.
Good evening. Uncle Dennis here, sitting in the squeaky warm chair. Thank you, Robert, with another edition of From the Cream to the Dregs right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also on www.freakradio.org. Stay tuned. About 20 minutes from now, we'll break open the Brew of the Week. Of course, at 9 o'clock is the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And, of course, 10 o'clock, we're going to unveil our Spotlight Group of the Week. So stay tuned for all that right here on your pirate radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
People talking, but they just don't know what's in my heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a man I love gold. Sugar, let the good times roll. A lot of people live and make believe. They keep a lot of dread up
their sleeve. My love, baby, ain't the kind of fool. Come on, sugar, let the good times roll. Understood. It's even nicer when you're feeling good. You got me flipping like a flag on a pole. Come on, sugar, let the good times roll.